This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Out of Breath by Rebecca Donovan, performed by Kate Rudd. Prologue. I used my heel to kick the door closed with a grunt, my arms balancing the heavy box of textbooks. This was the last box from the car. I was officially moved in. My roommates were out running soccer drills, something I'd much rather be doing. There was nothing fun about moving. I climbed the stairs toward my room and hesitated at the top when I heard Sarah's agitated voice. I don't even know why I bothered picking up. Yeah, maybe I'll talk to you about it eventually after you stop acting like such an ass. She released a frustrated groan, so I assumed she'd hung up. I made some noise as I neared the door so she knew I was coming and could put her temperament in check. She'd told me about her decision to end things with Jared, and I listened, but I was basically incapable of offering any guidance. Sarah didn't confide too much in me lately, afraid something would upset me. It wasn't that I was that fragile. I just refused to talk about anything. "Is that it?" Sarah asked, her smile brighter than usual, overcompensating for the annoyance that still lingered in her eyes. "You can tell me, you know," I offered, trying to be the friend that she needed right now. "No, I can't," she stated, redirecting her attention to the boxes stacked all over the room. "I don't have much space to work with. This room is tiny." I let her avoid the topic since that's what she preferred. "I don't need anything, really. No need to bother." "I thought you'd say that," Sarah replied with a small smile. "That's why I only brought one thing to decorate your room." She reached for a purse so big it could honestly be called a duffel bag and pulled out a frame. Flipping it around, she presented it under her chin with a beaming smile. It was a picture of us at her house, the large bay window overlooking the front yard in the background. Anna, her mother, had taken it during the summer I'd lived with them. From the gleam in our eyes, it was apparent we were on the verge of laughing. "Oh, my God," Sarah said with a shocked seriousness. I tightened my eyes in confusion. "Is that a smile I see on your face, Emma Thomas? I was wondering if I'd ever see one again." I ignored her, straightening my lips, and turned toward the built-in desk in the corner of the small bedroom. "Perfect," Sarah admired as she set it on the dresser. I pulled out the textbooks and tucked them on the shelf under the desk. "Okay, let's unpack you. I'm so happy you're out of the dorms now. And I've always loved Meg. And Serena, even though she won't let me do a makeover, I'll work on it. But what's up with Peyton?" "She's harmless," I said, breaking down an empty cardboard box. "I guess every house needs drama," Sarah noted, laying a stack of folded shirts in an open drawer. "And as long as Peyton's the only drama in this house, I can live with that." "That's what I was thinking," I replied, hanging clothes in the minuscule closet. Sarah plopped a black boot box on the bed. "Should we keep the boots in the box or set them in the closet?" When she began to slide the cover off, my hand slammed it shut. She jumped and looked up at me in alarm. "They're not boots." I could hear the edge in my voice. Sarah's mouth opened in surprise as she took in my intense expression. "Okay. Where do you want it?"
"I don't care. I'd actually rather not know," I answered. "I'm getting something to drink. Do you want anything?"
"Water," Sarah requested, her voice quiet. When I returned with the two bottles of water a few minutes later, Sarah was making the bed and the box was gone. Setting my shoes on the bottom of the closet floor was the final step. There was a benefit to not owning much. I sat on the rolling chair at the desk while Sarah lay on her stomach on the bed, disrupting the display of decorative pillows she'd just masterfully assembled. I knew I'd stuff them on the top shelf of my closet after she left. "You know I ended it because I can't do the distance thing, right?" Sarah asked. I spun the chair around, surprised she'd decided to open up. "I know it's hard for you." "It always has been," I replied. She'd had the same challenge in high school when we were in Connecticut and Jared was attending Cornell in New York. But she made it work by visiting him practically every weekend for the last part of our senior year.
"I'll be in France. There's no way I could do that to us," she continued. "It doesn't seem fair to make him wait."
"But would you want him seeing anyone else while you're gone? Because that's basically what you're giving him permission to do. And then what happens when you get back?"
Sarah was quiet, resting her chin on her hands with her eyes focused on the floor. "I just don't want to know about it. And if I meet someone in Paris, he doesn't need to know about that either. Because in the end, I know we're supposed to be together. But I'm not sure either one of us is ready to admit that."
I still didn't understand her logic, but I wasn't about to challenge her.
She sat up suddenly, not allowing me the chance to say anything in return. "So do you think, since I'm going to be gone, that I can let Meg know a little about you? Not everything, just enough so she'll be here for you while I can't be. I hate the thought of being so far away without someone looking out for me," I finished.
"Yeah," she replied, smiling gently.
"I don't want you to be alone. You have a tendency to shut yourself off for days at a time. It's not good. I'll still call you every day, of course, but I hate not being close. In case you..."
Sarah looked down, unable to finish the sentence.
"Sarah, I'm not going to do anything," I promised feebly.
"You don't have to worry about me."
"Yeah, it doesn't mean I won't."
1. Pandora's Box.
"Bonne année!"
Sarah shouted through the phone. Music and voices exploded around her, making it difficult to hear her clearly. It could also have been that she was calling from Paris and the reception wasn't the best.
"Happy New Year to you, too," I replied loudly. "Although it's still last year here for another 9 hours.
"Well, I'm telling you, next year is looking pretty friggin' fabulous from where I'm standing. This party is insane. Designer drunks," she giggled, her own sobriety in question. "And I designed my own dress just for tonight."
"I'm sure it's impressive. I wish I could see it."
I wondered if we really needed to keep yelling to be heard, but she didn't retreat to anywhere quieter. I sucked it up because I wanted to hear her voice, even in her current giggly disposition. I hadn't heard it enough since she'd started the exchange program in France in the fall. She'd spent last summer and every break during our freshman year in California with me. Knowing I was going to see her every few months almost made life bearable. So far, my sophomore year sucked. If it weren't for my roommates, I wouldn't do anything outside of soccer in school.
"You're not going to lock yourself in your room like you did last New Year's Eve, are you?"
"The door won't be locked, but I am staying in my room," I confirmed. "Where's Jean-Luc?"
"Getting us a bottle of champagne. I'm sending you a picture of my dress as soon as we hang up."
"Hey, Em?" Meg poked her head in my room, then noticed I was on the phone. "Sorry, is that Sarah?"
I nodded.
"Hi, Sarah!" Meg screamed.
"Hi, Meg!"
Sarah screamed in return.
I think she heard you," I told Sarah, wiggling a finger in my ringing ear. "But now I can't."
Meg smiled.
"Well, I have to go," Sarah yelled above a roar of laughter. "My man and champagne have arrived. I'll call you tomorrow. Love you, Em."
"Bye, Sarah," I replied. God, I missed her. I wasn't sure if she realized how much. It wasn't like I told her. But I did. I missed her. A lot.
"It sounds like she's having an incredible New Year," Meg remarked, sitting down on my bed. "I could hear the party all the way across the room."
"What time are you leaving?" I asked, knowing she was meeting up with some friends in San Francisco to celebrate.
"In an hour. We're all supposed to go out for dinner before the party."
My phone chimed and an image of Sarah filled my screen. She looked stunning, of course, in a shimmery dark green sleeveless dress that had a 20s flapper girl flair with her shoulders dramatically exposed before it swept up into a high collar. Her wavy red hair was twisted back at the nape of her neck. She was puckering her shiny red lips, her eyes smoldering as Jean-Luc kissed her on the cheek while clutching a bottle of champagne. I shared the picture with Meg.
Sexy. Did she design that dress?
Yep, I replied.
That's incredible.
Agreed. I placed the phone on my desk next to my laptop as Meg asked, "Do you mind if I borrow your black boots?"
"Go for it."
I turned back toward my screen to continue downloading the required reading for the next quarter. They're in the box under my bed.
"You can still change your mind and come with me," Meg offered.
I could hear the box sliding along the carpet.
"Thanks, but I'm all set," I told her. "I'm not really a New Year's fan."
I tried to keep my tone flat, not allowing the reasons why to reflect in my voice. The last time I'd celebrated, the year had held promises of happiness and a future I wanted to be a part of. Now it was just another page torn from the calendar.
"Em, I'm begging you one more time, please, please, please go with me tonight," Peyton groveled within my door frame. "I really don't want to go with Brooke. You never go out with me, and it's New Year's. Make an exception this one time."
I spun around in my chair to decline her invite to the party for the 1,000th time. Before I could utter a word, her eyes lit up and she directed her attention towards Meg.
"Ooh, what's that?"
I followed her inquisitive expression as she moved toward the bed. Meg had just removed the cover to the box that was set on my bed. The wrong box. A vapor of memories and unfathomable heartache released into the room as the box opened. I couldn't breathe. Meg ripped the white t-shirt with the blue handprints out of Peyton's hands as she held it up.
"Stop it, Peyton," Meg scolded.
I remained paralyzed as she continued to flaunt my past in front of me.
"Still not doing a very good job fading."
His voice flitted through my head, sending a chill through my body.
"I love this," Peyton admired, shaking out my pink sweater. "Can I have it?"
"No, knock it off, Peyton." Meg snatched the sweater and placed it back into the box.
"Sorry, Em."
The rush of painful emotion coursed through me, forcing me to feel more than I had in the past year and a half. I couldn't utter a sound. It was like I was flayed and every nerve was exposed. Before Meg could slide the cover back over my past, Peyton removed a jewelry box.
"You can't have it. Please, I'll pay you, but you can't take that from me."
The desperation echoed through me, and the memory of cold, hard eyes sent a panic flashing through my body, releasing me from my silent torture. I sprang from the seat and grabbed the blue box from Peyton's hand. My sudden movement forced her to take a step back. I threw it in the box and slammed the cover back on. My heart was beating so fast my hands were shaking. I gripped the edge of the cover, waiting for the pain to subside, but it was too late. The simple act of opening that box had unleashed the wrath of guilt and despair I'd hidden within my darkest depths, and now it wasn't going to be confined by a lid.
"Sorry, Em," Peyton whispered.
I didn't turn around. I slid the box under my bed and took a deep breath. My heart was singeing around the edges like a burning piece of paper, the flames slowly creeping toward the center. I closed my eyes and tried to extinguish it, but couldn't. "I'm going for a run," I murmured, barely audible.
"Okay,"
Meg responded cautiously. Afraid of what she might see in my eyes, I didn't dare look at her as she ushered Peyton out of the room.
"I'll see you when you get back."
I threw on running gear and was out the front door within minutes. With my iPod blaring music into my ears, I began to run. Picking up the pace until my thighs burned, I cut down side streets until I reached the park. I stumbled to a stop, unable to fight back the onslaught of emotion. I clenched my trembling hands into tight fists and released a guttural cry until I feared I'd collapse. Without looking around to see whose attention I'd drawn, I took off into a sprint again. By the time I returned home, my face was dripping with a mixture of tears and sweat. The exhaustion from the run had helped ease most of the fire, but I couldn't extinguish it all, as much as I tried. My insides still burned.
I considered what I could do to push the torment back into the dark and return me to my numb state. I couldn't do it on my own. I needed help. I was desperate. "Peyton!" I called out from the bottom of the stairs. She turned down the music in her room and poked her head out. "Hey, Em, what's up?"
"I'll go with you," I heaved, still trying to catch my breath.
"What?" she questioned, unsure that she heard me correctly.
"I'll go to the party with you," I repeated more clearly, my breath beginning to even out.
"Yes," she exclaimed. "I have the perfect tank top for you to wear, too."
"Great," I grumbled, heading towards the kitchen to get a drink of water.
"You have no idea how happy I am that you changed your mind," Peyton chirped when we stepped out of her red Mustang at the end of the car-lined street. Even from here, the music carried down the block.
"No problem," I replied absently. I needed to be distracted from the voices that were suddenly whipping around in my thoughts. I needed to find my way back to being numb.
"You cannot wear that sweatshirt," Peyton scolded before I could shut the car door.
"But it's cold out," I argued.
"Not where we're going. It's only a short walk to the house. Come on, Em, suck it up."
I reluctantly removed the sweatshirt to reveal the glittery silver tank top beneath and shivered as I tossed it into the car.
"Much better," Peyton admired with a vibrant smile, joining me on the sidewalk and sliding her arm through mine. "Let's go party."
Peyton strode alongside me in her strapless red dress, her golden blonde hair lying in a glossy sheet down her back. Her greenish-blue eyes were lit with excitement as she escorted me toward the music that grew louder with each passing house. I was surprised the police hadn't shown up yet to shut it down. But when I looked around, I realized it was surrounded by college housing and assumed most of the residents were either away for winter break or at the party. We approached the side of a beige house with a large white tent in the backyard. A couple of guys were handing out tiaras and top hats as we passed through the entrance. Peyton slid the tiara on her head, and I opted for a top hat. A guy ladled red liquid out of a trash can and set the cup on a table in front of us. When I took the cup, Peyton's eyes widened.
"You know that has alcohol in it, right?"
"Yes, I do," I replied casually, taking a sip. It was sweet. It reminded me of an overly sugared fruit punch. This wasn't going to be as difficult as I thought. Why had my mother opted for the dreadful taste of straight vodka when this was an option?
"But you don't drink," Peyton countered in obvious shock.
"New year, trying new things," I explained dismissively, holding up my cup. She grinned and tapped it.
"To trying new things."
As Peyton took a sip, I opted to empty the contents of my cup, needing the effects of it to kick in sooner rather than later. After all, it was the reason I was here.
"Em," Peyton scolded, "I know it doesn't taste like it, but there's a lot of alcohol in there. You may want to pace yourself."
I shrugged and grabbed another before we entered the tent crammed with bodies. We made our way to the stage where a band was performing, drowning out any possibility of a conversation, which was fine by me.
"Hey!" Peyton hollered,
recognizing a tall guy with wavy brown hair dressed in typical college plaid.
"I've been waiting for you," plaid guy replied.
"I told you I was coming," she returned playfully.
She turned toward me and said, "Tom, this is Emma, the roommate you haven't met yet."
"Wow," Tom noted. "I can't believe you're actually here."
I feigned a smile, wondering what Peyton had told him about me. I could only guess.
"And this is Cole,"
Tom stated, directing my attention to the blonde guy with broad shoulders standing next to him.
"Hi,"
Cole responded with a nod and a slight smile. Peyton elbowed me. I ignored her and barely nodded in return, taking a sip out of my cup instead. Insistent, Peyton grabbed Tom's arm and said,
"I need another drink."
Tom eyed her full cup in confusion but let Peyton drag him away. I glared at her as she smirked back at me.
"Having a good time?"
Cole yelled over the screeching coming from the stage. He didn't appear concerned by the forced pairing. I cupped my ear to indicate I couldn't hear him. Instead of repeating the question, he bent down and said,
I was beginning to wonder if you were real. I kept hearing about you, but I've never actually seen you out.
I leaned back, not wanting to encourage him to get so close, and began scanning the crowd around us without paying much attention to the guy in front of me.
Don't say much, huh?
I shook my head and took another large gulp of my drink to drown the inferno still burning beneath the surface. Why did I think coming to this party was a good idea?
You're amazing.
What did I do?
Just you. Everything about you. You're amazing.
My back straightened, the clarity of our voices invading my head. Images of the last New Year's party I'd attended threatened to surface, and I swallowed them down with another sip.
Are you going to say anything at all?
Cole asked, pulling me out of the painful remembrance of being wrapped in Evan's arms while watching fireworks explode overhead. Huh? I finally looked up at him. What would you like me to say? I challenged.
Well, that was a start, he taunted, not fazed by my rudeness. You go to Stanford?
I nodded my head, then caught myself when he accusingly widened his eyes. Yes, I stressed. And you?
Yeah, I'm a junior,
he answered. Sophomore, I responded, pointing to myself. I preempted the next predictable question with, pre-med. He appeared impressed.
Business.
I nodded in return.
Do you play soccer with Peyton?
I sighed, not loving the mundane exchange, and I took another gulp. Yep. Are you on a team?
No, I played lacrosse in high school, but nothing here.
I didn't come to the party for small talk or to get to know someone new. I needed to get away from this guy. Yet I really didn't care what he thought of me. I swallowed the last mouthful of the drink. I need another, I announced. I'll see you around. I turned and walked away before he could respond. I dodged through the crowd in search of the drink table. The band stopped to take a break, and a DJ started, igniting a movement of dancing energy toward the small stage. I was still feeling too much, and the misery was grating on my nerves. I'd never drank more than a couple of sips before, so I didn't know how long it would be until it took effect. I also had no idea how it would feel when it finally did. My mother turned to alcohol to numb her pain, and even though I swore that I'd never drink, there was only so much pain a person could endure before breaking that promise. And I didn't want to be in pain anymore. I squeezed through the crowd toward the far side of the tent where I spotted a table lined with filled cups.
Need a drink?
A voice asked close to my ear. I turned to find a guy with a thin, muscular frame, a mop of black hair, and a dark line of facial hair down the center of his chin. From the tattoo behind his ear that crept down his neck, and the few guys with similar attire of t-shirts and ripped jeans, I deduced that he was with the band. Are you talking to me?
Yeah,
he replied with a cocky grin.
I'm Gev. I noticed your empty cup and thought I could help you out.
Well, you don't have a cup at all, so maybe I should be helping you out. He laughed, but I left him and kept walking toward the table. When I turned back, I had two cups in my hands, knowing he was still behind me. He stopped short and smiled when I offered him one. I like your name. It's different.
I'm attached to it,
he said with a quick raise of his brows, making me roll my eyes with a low laugh. Are you going up again? I asked, nodding toward the stage, deciding I might as well talk to someone, and he seemed interesting enough. At least he wasn't predictable.
Nope, we're done for the night. And now I have some catching up to do.
He downed the cup with several large gulps. I looked on, amused, and I handed him another, which he accepted with a flashy smile.
What's your name?
He asked, moving away from the crowd forming in front of the table. Emma.
How are you feeling?
A minute ago I would have answered, on fire. But now I realized the fire was gone. In its place was a dull hum. A swirling calm ran through me, casting a veil of numbness over my senses. Calm, I answered with a deep breath, relieved that the jacked-up Kool-Aid had finally kicked in. He laughed at my answer.
I've never heard that one before.
You've never met me before.
True, but I like that. I mean, that you say what you're thinking. No bullshit. That's cool.
I shrugged.
Well, here's to no bullshit.
Gev raised his cup and I tapped it with mine before we both took several large gulps.
Do you go to...
No bullshit! I cut him off, making him laugh.
Okay, he said, considering my request. What color underwear do you have on?
I was caught off guard by his forwardness. I can't remember. I pulled my jeans by the belt loop to take a look. Purple.
Nice,
he nodded in approval. And you? I asked, liking this no-bullshit conversation. It was more interesting than talking about majors and sports teams. Gev was more daring and unbuttoned his pants to show the top of his boxer briefs.
Black.
I can see that, I admired with my lips pursed to keep from smiling. I tipped my cup back and finished it, embracing the haze that continued to creep in. Gev's hand slid along my back as he leaned in to ask,
"Who are you kissing at midnight?"
"How much time do I have?" I inquired, not that it made a difference. He looked at his watch and answered,
"An hour."
"I guess whomever I'm closest to."
"Then I'd better stay next to you," he replied with a quick raise of his eyebrows.
"Emma!" Peyton exclaimed. I turned toward her voice and squinted to focus as she neared me. "Where's Cole?"
"I don't know," I replied when I finally recognized her beside me.
She looked from me to Gev and scrunched her eyes in confusion. "Come over here," she demanded, grabbing my arm and dragging me away from him. I stumbled after her, not prepared for the sudden movement. "Who is that?" "Gev, he's with the band," I answered and waved back at him. He raised his cup in return. "What happened to Cole? He's hot."
"He's boring," I huffed. "Gev's much more interesting."
"How many drinks have you had?"
"3.
I grinned proudly at my accomplishment. "And I'm numb." "3? And we've only been here an hour. You can't drink anything else or you'll be on the ground before midnight, and I don't think Gev's a good fit for you."
"So?"
I wasn't looking for a good fit anyway. I was just looking for someone interesting to talk to or drink with, but I didn't want to waste my words trying to explain that to her. "Oh my God, you're already drunk." I considered her accusation and smiled widely. I actually couldn't quit smiling from head to toe, except my lips felt tingly. I didn't mind being drunk. It wasn't what I expected, but it wasn't bad. All I really cared about was that I couldn't feel the unrelenting pain anymore.
"Okay," I answered,
accepting her assessment as true.
"I'm going to find Gev now."
I was done with the lecture. She wasn't being fun. I turned and the quick motion made everything blur past me. I remained still for a moment to allow the world to settle back in place before searching for his dark hair among the faces.
"Fine, I'll find you at midnight," she called after me.
I felt a hand grab my arm and I turned my heavy head to find his dark blue eyes.
"Still next to you," he declared, clasping my hand.
"Tell me something interesting," I requested, taking the cup he offered me.
"I think you are the most interesting person I've met in a long time," he responded.
He slipped his hand around my waist and leaned in to say,
"Dance with me."
I was about to open my mouth to explain that I didn't dance, but the next thing I knew, we were squeezed in amongst the sweaty bodies and his hand was pressed against the small of my back, pulling me against him. I flopped my arms around his neck to steady myself and let him do all the dancing. He even danced for me, swaying my hips along with him. Time moved fast, and the next thing I knew, I was yelling along with everyone else as this year ticked away into the next.
"Happy New Year!"
we all chimed in unison. Gev turned me around and made certain he was the one closest to me. I allowed his wet lips to slide along mine, followed by the force of his tongue.
My head buzzed louder when I closed my eyes, propping myself against him. He pulled me closer, making me stumble slightly. Gev gripped me tighter and continued to kiss me aggressively. I didn't stop him. I kept thinking about how strange it felt. I couldn't feel my lips. Or maybe I couldn't feel his lips. Either way, it didn't seem like we were really kissing, and I was more focused on this than the fact that I was kissing at all.
"Want to get out of here?"
Gev offered, his breath tickling my neck.
"I live a few houses down and we have a hot tub."
A hot tub sounded good. Besides, I wanted to sit down. My legs weren't doing a good job holding me up. "Sure," I replied. And he led me through the heat of the crowd and into the cool night. It must have warmed up after we'd arrived because I didn't need my sweatshirt anymore. He kept a hold of my hand and led me down the sidewalk. I could have sworn he said he lived a few houses down, but I felt like I saw a million sidewalk cracks before we were finally in his backyard. But then I didn't remember seeing his front yard. Maybe his house really was close. Either way, we were here, and I couldn't wait to sit down. Gev uncovered a hot tub tucked next to a fence. As he turned on the jets, I studied it, trying to figure out how I was supposed to lift my leg over the side. Gev stripped down to the black boxer briefs I'd gotten a sneak peek of earlier. I followed his lead, dropping my jeans and tank top to the ground. I discovered I didn't have any shoes on, and I couldn't remember where I'd put them.
"I love purple," he declared,
pulling me toward him and nuzzling his face into my neck. He was distracting me from solving the hot tub dilemma. I was about to push him away when I finally spotted the stairs. I smiled proudly. He led me to the hot tub and I slipped in, breathing a sigh of relief now that I was finally off my feet. I closed my eyes and leaned my head back. Everything started to spin. I could feel Gev's hands on me and his mouth on my shoulder. I opened my eyes and he was right there, eager for more kissing. I tilted my head towards him and connected with his greedy lips. I still couldn't feel them, but I couldn't feel anything anymore, so I didn't care. Caught up in the kissing and the hot, swirling water, everything suddenly ceased to exist. My head mimicked the motion of the water, and the air felt so hot, closing in around me. Gev was there again, pushing up against me. I was too distracted to participate, trying to keep the world from spinning out from under me. That's when I felt the tightness in the back of my throat and knew I had to get out of the water. I pushed past him and staggered down the stairs, just in time to find the bushes and release the red contents of my stomach. The world spun faster, knocking me to my knees before I heaved again.
"Are you okay?"
Gev asked from behind me. I shook my head, giving in one more time. I took a deep breath of the cold air and pushed myself up to stand, leaning against the fence to steady myself.
"I need to lie down," I told him, not even knowing where he was.
He grabbed my hand and I stumbled after him. Everything flashed by in a blur. I concentrated on keeping my feet under me as I tried to keep up with him. We were in a house. Then I saw a door. The door opened and a light revealed a bathroom.
"I'll get you shorts and a t-shirt to put on," he said and disappeared.
I gripped the edge of the sink and closed my eyes, trying to find center. The scales of calm had tipped to swirling chaos, and I had an awful taste in my mouth. I opened the cabinet above the sink and grabbed the toothpaste. I squeezed it along my finger and scrubbed my tongue before rinsing my mouth with water. Folded clothes appeared in front of me. I removed my wet bra and underwear and slid them on. The warm, dry t-shirt smelled good as I slid it over my head. Then Gev's hand found mine again, and I trailed after him into a dark room. Gev stood before me in a pair of shorts. I leaned against him for balance, my hands pressed against his bare skin. He took this as an invitation and bent down to taste the toothpaste on my lips. His hands gripped my hips, and he kissed me hard.
The numbness that I had so desperately wanted to possess me kept me from caring when his hands groped my back under the T-shirt. I didn't care when he thrust his tongue into my mouth. I didn't care when he ground his hardened body against me and groaned in my ear. And I didn't care when he slipped the T-shirt over my head and let me fall back onto his bed. 2. No do-overs. My head splintered into a thousand pieces as I slowly opened my eyes. I placed my hand against it to keep it steady while I propped myself up on my elbow. Where was I? The slightest movement intensified the lightning storm inside my skull. Glancing around the musty room, I tried to remember what I'd done and why I was here. There was someone lying next to me. I noted the dark hair on the unmoving form under the blue plaid comforter. I tried harder to recall last night, but was only met with flashing images of the party and a guy. It must have been this guy. I looked under the comforter. I didn't have any clothes on. I sunk back onto the flat pillow and felt my stomach roll. I looked over at the nightstand and saw the torn package. I was about to be sick. What had I done? I lifted the blanket and examined his lean, naked body beneath it. The sour taste of disgust rose in the back of my throat. I eyed the winding tattoo along his back that finished behind his ear. Who was this guy? I knew he'd told me his name, and I searched through my broken memory to find it. Gev. That was it. All I wanted to do was leave and never see him again, but I didn't know where my clothes were. I eased myself up and then remained still to allow my pounding head to catch up with the movement. Flinching in agony, I crawled along the bed, trying not to disturb Gev, who was breathing heavily with his mouth open. Although it didn't look like anything would wake him. I found a T-shirt and shorts on the floor and slipped them on. Moving gingerly to keep the fit of axes from slicing through my head, I glanced around the small room. The full-sized bed took up most of it. The walls were wallpapered with rock posters and clothes hung out of the half-open drawers of an abused bureau. I opened the door leading to a small hallway, peeking out to listen. A hum of voices carried from a television, but otherwise it was quiet. Passing the bathroom, I suddenly stopped, recognizing my purple bra and underwear hanging on the doorknob. Unable to remember removing them, I sighed. I grabbed them and shoved them under my arm before continuing down the hall. A sprawled figure lay on the couch with the remote in his hand and a bag of chips spilled on the floor next to him as the morning news program aired on the television screen. I crept past him, flinching as the screen door squeaked and I entered the frigid morning air. The grass was coated with dew, chilling my bare feet as I stepped across the back lawn. My clothes caught my eye lying next to a hot tub. I hugged my body to quell a shiver and flung my jeans and tank top over my arm. I pulled my phone out of my pocket. I listened to it ring as I walked toward the sidewalk. Sitting on edge of the front lawn, as if waiting for me, were my shoes. I blew out an exasperated breath as I hung them from my fingers and I kept walking. "Emma," Peyton rasped, still half asleep, "I lost you. Where are you?"
"I don't know," I whispered,
though my voice still sounded loud in the pre-dawn quiet of the sleeping neighborhood. I began to notice clear plastic cups strewn along my path.
"I think I'm near the party. Where are you?"
"On the couch," she muttered. She groaned and continued with, "Let me find my shoes and I'll meet you outside." I spotted Peyton's red dress several houses down and continued to move slowly in her direction. "Hey," I croaked when I finally reached her. "Hey," she uttered in return. She plopped a top hat on my head and slid her tiara in place before wrapping her arm around mine. With her head on my shoulder, we drudged toward her Mustang, which felt about a million miles away. I carefully lowered myself onto the passenger seat, trying not to jostle the few brain cells I had left, while Peyton positioned herself on the driver's side. She slid her oversized sunglasses on her face and sighed in relief, even though it was barely light enough to see without headlights. When we arrived home, we crept silently up the stairs and closed our bedroom doors behind us. I stripped out of the T-shirt and shorts, not wanting them touching my skin a second longer, and tossed them in the trash before slipping on a pair of boxers and tank top. I pulled the covers over my head and passed out. "Emma?" Peyton beckoned softly. I was jarred slightly when she sat down next to me. "Are you alive?"
"No," I grumbled from under my blankets. "I was hoping for death."
I pulled the blankets tighter around my head.
"Drinking sucks."
Peyton chuckled. "The way you drink does. It's almost noon. Let's get breakfast. It will make you feel better."
"I don't believe you," I griped without moving. "I think a decapitation is the only thing that will make me feel better."
"Grease is a hangover miracle nutrient," she promised. I peeked out from under the blankets. Peyton's hair was a tangled mess, and her puffy eyes were smeared with mascara. I could only imagine what I looked like. I glanced in the mirror above my dresser. I ran my fingers over the nest that was once my hair and wiped the black streaks under my bloodshot eyes. My mouth was pasty with the lingering taste of something putrid that made my stomach turn. "Let me take a shower first," I conceded. Peyton stood up and headed toward the door. "I need one, too. I'll meet you downstairs when we're done." I grabbed random clothes from my drawers and faltered blindly toward the bathroom, unable to open my eyes beyond a squint. I turned on the water until it was almost scalding and stood under the cleansing streams. The night was slowly coming back to me as the water pelted my skin, turning it red.
"You're fucking disgusting!"
Carol's hateful tone rang through my head. With my eyes clenched tight, I forced her away and scrubbed harder, knowing I was living up to her expectation of me. I tried to scour away the feel of his hands on my body and the taste of his tongue in my mouth. When I turned off the water, I was still repulsed with myself. After dressing in jeans and an oversized gray hoodie, I tucked my hair under a baseball hat and found Peyton waiting for me, slumped on the couch. She stood up, and just as we turned toward the door, Meg walked in. She looked tired, but not near death like we did. Her eyes flipped from Peyton to me, and then back to Peyton.
"You got her drunk," Meg accused.
"She did that all on her own," Peyton countered. "We're getting breakfast. Wanna come?" I lowered my head in avoidance. I could still feel Meg looking at me when she answered.
"Sure."
"Good." Peyton held up her keys. "Then you can drive." A line awaited us when we pulled into the parking lot of the local breakfast spot. The busy restaurant was occupied by a mosaic of pale faces trying to piece together their new year. Thankfully, the line progressed quickly, and we slid into a booth 15 minutes later. Meg studied me from across the booth and shook her head.
"I can't believe you drank. I mean, you never drink. What happened?"
I shrugged and mumbled, "Pandora." As Meg's eyes dipped in sympathy, I redirected my attention out the window.
"What does music have to do with getting drunk?" Peyton questioned, not understanding what I was talking about. "Do you mean the musician you hooked up with last night? Were you trying to be cryptic or something?"
"Wait, you slept with someone?"
Meg's voice rose, drawing the attention of a couple of guys walking by. I sank further down into the booth, pulling my hat over my eyes when I heard them chuckle.
"Geez, Meg," Peyton said sternly. "Why don't you just announce it to the whole diner?"
"Sorry," Meg grimaced, "but I don't want to talk about it," I interrupted firmly.
They both opened their mouths and then closed them again. Our food arrived, thankfully, allowing us something to do other than dwell on my drunken indiscretion.
"Where did you end up, Peyton?" Meg interrogated.
"On Tom's couch," she stated. "Alone. He disappeared around 3, and I couldn't find Emma, so I fell asleep on his couch." Meg filled us in on her night as we ate our bacon and egg sandwiches. It wasn't nearly as eventful as what we went through, and turns out, grease really does have miraculous effects. At least my body felt one step closer to rejoining the human race when we left the diner. My phone rang as we reached the front stairs. I knew what was about to happen, and I wasn't ready. I took a deep breath and answered the phone anyway.
"Hi, Sarah."
"Happy New Year!" she bellowed. I winced and pulled the phone away from my ear.
"Not so loud," I begged.
Okay, she replied in confusion. "Wait, did you go out last night?"
"Yeah,"
I answered softly, "but I'm not talking about it." Sarah was quiet for a moment. "Does Meg know?" I sat down on the couch and rested the back of my head against the cushion.
"Yes."
"Can I ask her about it?" she asked cautiously. I wasn't surprised by her request. She often spoke to Meg to get updates whenever I was less than forthcoming. It was her way of being with me when she couldn't. I paused and swallowed hard. "As long as you promise we'll never have to talk about it." I could hear her thinking on the other end of the phone. "I promise." She hung up on me, and within 30 seconds, Meg's phone rang. She shot a glance at me from the other end of the couch. "Sarah wants to know what happened to me last night, and I told her I wasn't talking about it."
"But I can tell her, right?" she confirmed.
"Not in front of me." Meg stood and began to climb the stairs as she answered the phone.
"Hi, Sarah."
"I'm coming with you," Peyton called after her, taking 2 steps at a time. She was obviously feeling better. I chased 2 aspirin with a vitamin water and remained on the couch watching movies for the afternoon. I slunk away to my room in the early evening, leaving the girls with some horror movie that I really had no interest in. Sleep and I had taken way too long to finally find each other, and I didn't want to jeopardize that with a movie. Numbness had a price. Someone knocked lightly on my door.
"Come in," I answered.
Meg poked her head in.
"Hey."
She lowered herself gently down at the end of my bed.
"Still feel like shit?"
"Tell me it goes away," I begged, my eyes closed.
"You'll be better tomorrow," she assured me.
"Peyton told me how much you had to drink."
"Or what she saw you drink, anyway."
I remained silent. Then she finally said it.
"I know you don't want to talk about it, and we won't. I promise to never bring it up again. But before you drown in shame, know that everyone makes mistakes. And as far as I'm concerned,
don't," I shot out before she could finish his name.
"Sorry,"
she said, biting her lip.
"I meant that it didn't count. It was a mistake, and it doesn't count."
I'd never told Meg about my life in Weslin. I didn't explain why I almost never went out or why I refused to drink before last night. But I let Sarah tell her when she came to visit after I'd moved into the house this past summer. She never mentioned what Sarah had told her, but it helped her understand why I kept everyone at a distance. I trusted Meg. I'd met her on the first day of soccer conditioning during our freshman year. She'd flown in from Pennsylvania, so we were both transplants. Meg embraced my withdrawn demeanor, and she instinctively felt the urge to look out for me. This reminded me of Sarah, and we bonded instantly. Over the season, we found Peyton gravitating toward us. Truth be told, Peyton gravitated toward everyone. She was in your face and refused to be ignored. People either hated her or loved her, and she couldn't care less either way. I think her brazen attitude is what made me like having her around. And then there was Serena. She was from California, as was Peyton, and she was currently spending winter break with her family, but when she was with us, she completed our mismatched quad perfectly. Serena was genuinely the kindest person I'd ever met, but it was laced with a straightforward attitude that could tell a priest where to go if he crossed her. I responded to her cutting-edge goth lifestyle with equal measures of intrigue and respect. As much as I was grateful for Peyton's and Serena's patience and acceptance for who I was, although Peyton did have moments of being a little too, well, Peyton, it was Meg who I trusted with the truth about a past that we'd never actually talked about. Meg became my voice of reason, vying to keep me sane. When I was tiptoeing along the edge, Meg was there to make sure I didn't fall over. So when she told me that my one-night stand could be erased, I wanted to accept her assurance and swallow it whole until it salved the guilt like an antacid. But I knew there was no use in trying. Everything began to crumble the moment she'd opened that box. My shameful encounter was just one more destructive choice I'd made that couldn't be undone. 3. New year, new experiences. Classes for the next quarter began the following week, allowing me to continue into the new year consumed with books, lectures, and studying. Everything seemed back to how it had always been, but it really wasn't the same, and I knew it. Meg and I drove to school together. Since we were both angling for acceptance into the School of Medicine, we shared several classes. However, she was gearing toward the hospitals while I was seeking refuge in the labs. Peyton flitted through the house as usual, not knocking when she entered the bathroom or bedrooms. She wasn't bothered by what she could be potentially walking in on, with the exception of Serena. Being the only one of us with a boyfriend, Serena had little tolerance for Peyton's invasion of privacy, not to mention that Peyton annoyed the hell out of her. James was essentially our fifth roommate. "Okay, listen," Peyton approached me while I was in the kitchen making a sandwich before heading to the soccer field with Meg. "I know the party a few weeks ago was a bit of a disaster, but I think you should go out with me again. I promise to keep a better eye on you and help you gauge your level of drunkenness." I laughed at her absurd proposal. "Peyton, the drinking was a one-time thing. I'm all set, thanks." "Em," she implored passionately. "You had one bad night. It doesn't mean that you should give up your entire social life. We're in college. This is the time when we discover who we are and flirt with our tolerance for alcohol. I swear to you, there is a way to have a few drinks and not end up in some random guy's bed." I whipped around and threw a piece of bread at her. "Shut the fuck up, Peyton." She deflected the bread to the floor. "Sorry, really, that was stupid. I'm sorry," she groveled. "I shouldn't have said that." Before she walked away, she begged, "Will you at least think about it?" "Fine," I responded impatiently, just wanting her to stop. "I'll think about it." "Great! There's a party this Saturday," she chirped and whipped around before I could object.
"You're going to that party at College Green?"
Meg questioned when she rounded the corner with a soccer ball tucked under her arm. "I'm not..." "You're going too, right?" Peyton interjected before I could finish.
"I guess so."
Meg shrugged, then looked to me. "Don't worry, we'll have fun." I blew out a defeated breath. "Okay," I caved. If Meg was going, I should be all right. Peyton produced a triumphant smile and proceeded to bang on Serena's door.
"What?"
Serena hollered from the other side.
"Are you going to the party with us on Saturday? Emma's coming too."
Serena poked her head out and raised her eyebrows in my direction.
"You are?"
"I guess so."
"Okay, I'll go,"
she replied and slammed her door in Peyton's face.
"Please tell me that's not what you're wearing."
Peyton scowled at my worn jeans and faded concert t-shirt over a long-sleeved shirt.
"You wanted me to go. This is how you get me."
"Fine," she huffed before returning to the bathroom to finish her makeup while I went downstairs.
When I reached the bottom step, Serena walked through the front door with a paper bag in her arms, wearing form-fitting black pants, a black tank top under a cropped leather jacket, and black combat boots as the finishing touch. Her short black pixie hair flipped out stylishly around her powder-white face. Dramatic liner framed her large brown eyes. Serena's look was more than a style. It was a statement. I was pretty certain she didn't own anything that wasn't black. She returned from the kitchen with two beers in her hands and offered one to Meg, who was leaning over the coffee table painting her nails. "I'm driving," Meg told her with a shake of her head. Serena eyed me and held out the bottle. "I can drive," I offered. "That's okay," Meg stated. "I don't mind. Go ahead if you want to drink. You're going with us, not just Peyton, so we'll watch out for you." "Hey!" Peyton hollered down the stairs in offense. I contemplated the bottle in Serena's hand carefully. I could try this, drinking casually. The first time I drank had nothing to do with the alcohol, and I never wanted to be that drunk again. Ever. "Okay," I agreed, taking the bottle. Meg flipped her eyes to me in surprise, but she went back to painting, trying to appear unfazed by my decision. Serena acted like we drank together all the time. But then again, Serena was pretty accepting of just about everyone and everything, taking all that came her way without blinking. I'd yet to witness anything that surprised her. I took a sip and grimaced. Yeah, I didn't like beer. "This tastes horrible," Serena grinned. "It's an acquired taste." "Why would anyone want to acquire a taste for something that tastes like ass?" I scrunched my nose in disgust. Serena laughed. "I'll make you a drink," she said before disappearing into the kitchen. "I'll drink your beer," Peyton declared, appearing at the bottom of the stairs. Her shiny golden hair hung down her back without a single strand out of place. She was very cognizant of her appearance, intently assembling herself from her shiny pink lips to her polished toes. She'd never let anyone other than us see her less than picture perfect. Just thinking about what she had to go through to keep up this effect exhausted me. "You'll drink anything," Meg teased, twisting the top on the polish. "I think you've probably tried just about everything there is." "Funny," Peyton sneered, tipping the bottle back into her mouth. "Here, try this." Serena handed me a glass with red liquid in it. My stomach instinctively clenched. Noticing my cringe, she assured me, "It's cranberry and vodka. I made it pretty weak, too." I accepted the drink and took a sip. It tasted mostly of cranberry with a hint of something else. "Thanks." While Meg finished getting ready in the upstairs bathroom, we sat in the living room, drinking. Something I quite honestly never thought I'd ever do. Was I supposed to keep holding the glass or set it on the coffee table? It didn't feel natural. I watched Serena and opted to hold it. I took a sip, not wanting to drink too fast. I knew I was being paranoid and just needed to relax already. "So, where's James tonight?" I asked Serena, needing to distract myself from internally freaking out. "He's working," Serena replied, finishing her beer and getting up. "Peyton, you ready for another?" James was a bouncer at one of the clubs that showcased local rock talent. With his shaved head, broad frame, and a tattoo on the back of his skull, he fit the persona. On the other hand, he was a dedicated student at Stanford, pursuing an education degree. The thought of James reshaping the minds of adolescents always made me smile. "Sure," Peyton called to her. I'd barely finished half the glass and they were already on their second. Maybe I was drinking too slow. Or maybe I just needed to get a grip and stop obsessing. "There's a great show coming up in a few weeks," Serena informed me. She handed Peyton another beer. Serena was my direct line to the best shows in the area. I was thankful to have a roommate who understood my need for fast beats and heavy guitar. Meg and Peyton didn't appreciate the genre, preferring head-bopping or hip-swaying music. Although I'd recently taken Meg to a few shows with encouraging results. "Let me know when, and I'll check if I have tests or anything due," I took another sip. Em, you spent all break reading the upcoming assignments for the next month, she accused. You'll be fine regardless. It won't be a late night. Ready to go? Meg announced, bounding down the stairs with her spiraled auburn curls bouncing after her. We finished off our drinks and followed her out the door. It was obvious when we'd arrived at the party because there was nowhere to park. After circling the block a few times, we were finally able to creep into a spot when another car pulled away. We followed a small group of people through a gated archway into a courtyard.
There's a pool, Meg nudged me playfully.
You wouldn't, Peyton threatened. Relax, Peyton, Meg snapped. We wouldn't do that here. I smirked. Two floors of apartments wrapped around the courtyard. People were mingling on the balconies and throughout the courtyard. A half dozen apartment doors were open, allowing access. A sound system was set up in the open space, blaring the most recent hip-hop music. Peyton raised her arms in the air and swayed her hips to the beat as she weaved between the bodies.
We need drinks!
As we followed her form-fitting green sweater through the crowd, she waved her hands in the air, revealing a ring of milky skin along her waistline. Heads turned as she wiggled by, but she was too focused on her mission to take notice. We continued up the stairs and into the closest open door.
Wait here, she instructed. I'll get us something.
I didn't think we could squeeze in any further if we tried. It was packed. Peyton appeared with her hands over her head and her fingers dipped into small plastic cups filled with Jell-O. She handed one to each of us. I looked down at the cup, trying to figure out how to eat it without a spoon. Squeezing the edges, I tried to slurp it. I cringed and shook off the sharp taste of alcohol. I licked at the pieces of Jell-O still clinging to my lips. Meg laughed.
Don't chew, just swallow it.
Always excellent advice, Peyton giggled. Meg grimaced.
Ew, we're only talking about Jell-O, Peyton.
It took me a moment to figure out what the hell they were referring to, and I scowled in revulsion when I figured it out. Peyton took note of my delayed reaction.
Oh, Emma, are you sure you had sex with that guy from the band? 'Cause I swear you're a virgin.
Let me get another round so you can try again, Meg offered, dragging Peyton with her. When they returned, I took two little cups and awaited instructions.
Swipe your finger around the edge to loosen it, and then pop it in your mouth, Peyton stated, demonstrating with ease.
I made another attempt and got most of it in my mouth. My Jell-O shot ineptitude made Meg laugh. I did better with the next one, though I still shuddered at the taste of the alcohol.
Now you let it settle and wait for the tickle before you drink anything else, Serena explained.
The tickle? Peyton questioned Serena with her brows raised.
Serena, you are so weird.
Whatever. Serena dismissed her and walked out of the apartment.
Tom!
Peyton suddenly hollered across the courtyard to the opposing balcony. To my surprise, he heard her and waved. She grabbed my wrist, causing me to stumble after her, which she didn't seem to notice or care, as she forced our way through the crowd.
We'll wait right here, Meg called out behind us. I was hoping you were going to be here, Peyton exclaimed, giving Tom a hug when we finally made our way to where he was standing.
You'd know if you'd actually called each other, I mumbled under my breath. Tom and Peyton had a strange relationship. I kept hearing about him and how they'd meet up at parties. She was obviously interested in him, but I didn't think they'd even exchanged phone numbers yet. We were all confused by it.
Hey!
I looked up to find Cole standing in front of me. Gritting my teeth, I forced a smile, suddenly realizing why Peyton had been so adamant about bringing me along.
Wow, two parties, I'm impressed, Cole taunted.
Parties aren't my thing, I countered in annoyance.
Obviously, he stated. Otherwise, I would have seen you before.
True, I admitted with a slight nod. Well, it's a new year, so I'm trying new things.
What's next on your list?
Cole inquired, his clear blue eyes focused on me. I avoided his gaze and studied the crowd around us.
Stage diving,
I answered without thinking. I really didn't have a new things list, so I was making it up as I went. But now that I'd said it, I actually wanted to try it.
Nice! You'll have to let me know when so I can witness that.
We'll see, I answered, not wanting to commit to seeing him again. I didn't want to find this guy interesting, no matter what he looked like. While he was looking in the other direction, I slipped away. I heard Peyton call my name, but refused to turn around. When I squeezed my way to where we'd left Serena and Meg, they were nowhere to be found. I scanned the crowd and spotted them by the pool. I ducked into an apartment and grabbed something grape-flavored and bubbly. I could barely feel the tickle, so I figured I was still safe. Meg saw me at the top of the stairs and waved. I nodded and followed the line down the steps. When I reached the bottom, an arm swept around my waist and pulled me to the side.
"Hey, gorgeous," Gev murmured in my ear, kissing my neck. "I was hoping I'd see you again."
Hi, I stuttered, my entire body stiffening at his touch. I looked around in a panic, but I couldn't locate Meg or Serena. Then Meg's spirals came into view and I connected with her. Her eyes flipped from me to Gev, and she pushed through faster, not caring that she was pissing people off. "So, how are you?" I asked, my voice cracking slightly.
"Sober," he complained. "I'm going up to get a drink. Wanna come?"
"Emma!" Meg exclaimed, her bright smile not entirely masking the concern flashing in her eyes. "There you are! We thought we lost you!" She noticed Gev's arm around my waist and the tightness in my shoulders as he squeezed me against him. "Hi, I'm Meg, and this is Serena." Serena just nodded and didn't even bother faking a smile.
"Gev," he responded. "Guess I'll find you later," he said, squeezing me and kissing my cheek before disappearing up the stairs.
I tried to smile while swallowing the bile that rose in the back of my throat. "Are you okay?" Meg asked, taking me by the hand and leading me away. "Yeah, I'm fine," I responded meekly, taking large gulps of the purple stuff from the cup in my other hand. "He's awesome looking," Serena noted from beside me. "Too bad he's a complete dick." I laughed, not expecting her remark. Meg smiled. "We won't let him near you," Meg promised, stopping near the pool. "There you are," Peyton announced dramatically when she found us a few minutes later. "Em, why do you take off like that again? Seriously, I think you should give Cole a chance. He's not my type." "Wait, are you talking about the guy you've been trying to set her up with for, like, forever?" Meg clarified.
I just met him at the New Year's party," I countered.
"But I've been wanting you to meet him for way longer," Peyton sighed. "I need an in with Tom, and they're never apart, so I figured you'd be a good fit for Cole." "You obviously don't know me very well." "Come on," Peyton sulked. "Cole is everyone's type." She eyed Serena in contemplation and corrected with, "Well, except for Serena. He's lacking the freak factor." "Fuck you, Peyton," Serena bit back. Meg laughed at their banter. They were always throwing snide comments back and forth. I sometimes wondered if they liked each other at all. "Seriously, Em," Peyton continued. "He's gorgeous. He's intelligent. He's a surfer. I don't go for the surfer type. Just drop it, okay?" I felt a sudden twist in my chest and swallowed the last of the grape alcoholic soda to be rid of it. I could use another drink. Anyone else?"
"I'll go with you," Serena offered, leading me toward another apartment.
"She's just being selfish as usual," Serena consoled. "Don't let her force you."
"I'm fine," I said quietly.
I waited for Serena on the balcony while she got our drinks. I kept scanning the crowd around me, fearful of running into Gev again. She returned a few minutes later and handed me a red plastic cup. "Jack and Coke," Serena explained. I took a sip and my stomach lit up.
"Whoa," I shivered. "That's strong."
"Sorry," Serena grimaced. "I didn't make it. Do you hate it?"
"It's not my favorite," I admitted as my mouth filled with saliva. "But I'll drink it."
We noticed Peyton and Meg dancing in a crowd by the pool.
Great, Serena grumbled and directed me to stand on the outskirts where it was less crowded.
I leaned against the rough exterior of the building, under the overhang of the balcony, slowly sipping the Jack with a touch of Coke. The tickle was turning into a slightly dizzying haze.
Someday we'll go to a party where there'll be music we can dance to, Serena promised. This music is shit.
I laughed. Two guys came up behind Meg and Peyton, pressing up against them and putting their hands on the girl's hips. Peyton turned around with a flirtatious smile and swung her arms around the guy's neck. Meg scooted away from the other guy, and he eventually got the message and disappeared into the crowd. I grinned in amusement.
I'm getting another drink, Serena announced. Will you be okay here, or do you want to come with me?
The party was now at capacity, and I didn't want to fight through the crowd. I'll wait.
Don't go anywhere, Serena stressed.
I nodded and took another sip. She glanced back a few times on her way up the stairs, making me roll my eyes.
I found you, Gev announced, appearing in front of me out of nowhere.
He leaned in and pressed his lips to mine. I froze, not returning the kiss. He pulled back, confused.
Are you mad at me?
No, I responded, not expecting the question.
Is it because I passed out on you the last time? He continued. You know, before we could have sex, I promised not to drink that much tonight.
My breath stilled and I stared at him. We didn't have sex.
Oh, dear God, we didn't have sex!
No, that's not it, I recovered, feeling my shoulders ease up. I just think you got the wrong impression.
Ah, Gev nodded in understanding. You're not that into me.
I'm not into anyone, I stressed, not wanting it to sound so harsh. Don't take it personally.
Not a problem, he shrugged.
He really didn't take it personally. He honestly didn't seem to care at all.
Well, have fun. And if you ever need to relieve some of that tension, find me.
Will do, I responded flatly, watching him walk away. Oh, shit, Serena groaned. I'm sorry, I totally forgot about Fuckhead. What happened? We didn't have sex, I told her.
Well, obviously, she replied. I mean, you're in the middle of a party.
Then she examined me.
Oh, you meant before?
I nodded. I'd held on to the guilt so tightly, I was having difficulty letting it go. But I couldn't deny I felt a hell of a lot lighter learning it never happened. Or maybe the Jack was starting to kick in. I spotted Meg still dancing along the pool's edge and smirked. Watch this, I said to Serena, dropping the empty cup on the concrete and shimmying my way toward Meg. Her back was toward me as I glided up behind her. Just as I was within reach, she turned toward me and smiled. Then she saw the devilish gleam in my eyes, and her mouth opened in surprise as I pushed her over the edge of the pool. Just as I let out a triumphant laugh, she grabbed my wrist and we both crashed through the water's surface.
Now we're even, Meg sputtered,
blowing water from her lips and grabbing the pool's edge.
For now, I jeered.
Everyone was looking at us. Some in amusement, others in annoyance. When we dragged our wet bodies from the pool, we discovered Peyton glaring at us with her arms crossed.
Let's go, she snapped. They're kicking us out.
Why? Meg laughed in confusion. Because we're in the pool?
Peyton released an exasperated sigh and stormed off toward the gate.
I guess the building manager doesn't care about the parties, Serena explained with a smile. But he doesn't want to put any extra effort into cleaning the pool, so no one's allowed in during them.
The crowd parted to let us pass, staring and snickering. When we made it to the sidewalk, we heard the announcement.
No one is allowed in the pool. If anyone else goes in, the party's over.
Meg and I started laughing.
Well, you definitely made an impression, Serena laughed alongside us.
I can't believe you did that, Peyton scolded.
You promised!
Meg promised, I countered. Don't worry, we won't get your car wet.
Do you still have the trash bags in your trunk?
Of course, Peyton confirmed impatiently in annoyance.
I still can't believe you got us kicked out.
Meg let out another burst of laughter as she took in the sopping jeans sagging from my hips. I grinned back, knowing we looked ridiculous. As we were peeling off our wet jeans and socks to place them in the trash bag, Serena announced,
"So, good news. Emma never slept with the sleazebag."
"What?" Meg and Peyton shot out in unison.
"He passed out before it happened," I explained, averting my eyes.
"I don't understand," Peyton said, shaking her head.
"How did you not know?"
I looked at her without understanding what she was asking.
"I mean, couldn't you feel that you didn't?"
She sighed.
"Wow, you're seriously clueless."
"Peyton," Meg reprimanded as we entered the car.
"I've only had sex once," I defended. "I had no idea I was supposed to be sore every time."
This made them all laugh.
"Not sore," Serena tried to explain. "But you definitely can tell when someone has trespassed."
"Serena!" Meg hollered at her. "That sounds so awful."
"I get it," I stated quietly, not wanting to reflect upon my first time any more than I wanted to think about what I'd almost done with Gev.
"Oh, by the way, Em, I gave Cole your number," Peyton announced.
"What the fuck, Peyton?"
4. Blind Leap. As my hands searched blindly under the bed for the shoe I'd been frantically trying to find, I caught a glimpse of a photo half hidden beneath my nightstand. I picked it up and fought for each breath as I stared at his face. I'd taken this picture. We were in the woods behind his house. I'd stolen his camera away from him and started to snap pictures of him. He'd always been the one behind the camera, so he was a reluctant subject. He chased after me, trying to get the camera back. The image was a black-and-white photo of his hand reaching for the camera. But I could see his eyes behind his outstretched fingers. They were gray and translucent on the paper. There was a shine to them, reflecting light. He was smiling. I didn't have to see the rest of his face to know that.
"I love that picture."
My heart squeezed tight as his voice whispered to me, reminding me of just how much I missed him. I clenched my eyes shut to close off every thought of him. I hadn't allowed myself to feel anything since I'd left him in that house, but now I was barraged with more emotion than I could handle, and I was finding it impossible to breathe.
"Emma, are you ready to—"
Serena's voice faded away. I forced myself to exhale, to find the strength to look away from the image, to forget.
"Yeah."
My voice cracked, standing on unsteady legs.
"I'm ready."
Serena studied my face when I turned toward her. Her eyes flicked to the picture on the floor, but she didn't say anything. I pushed out another breath and stilled the quake of my hands by clenching them into tight fists.
"Let's go,"
I said, forcing a smile. The black hole of emptiness that had protected me all of this time refused to shroud me in its shadows like I needed it to. I couldn't shut everything off anymore. The contemplative look in Serena's eyes disappeared with a blink. Her face lit up with a wide smile.
"Okay, come on."
When we arrived at the club, there was already a line of eager fans forming along the sidewalk.
"Hey, Nick,"
Serena greeted the bouncer with bright eyes. He stood without expression in front of the entrance, his muscles heaving beneath a shirt that looked like it was about to burst. He was primed for ass-kicking.
"Serena,"
he acknowledged and stepped to the side to allow us to enter. There were groans behind us as we slipped through the front doors. Serena liked to arrive early to watch the last-minute bustling of the club preparing for the show, before the madness was unleashed. She also wanted to see James before he had to take his post in front of the stage. He found us at our usual spot, seated on the crushed velvet couches on the second level. He sat between us and leaned into the crook of Serena's arm after he kissed her high.
"James, will you let Emma stage dive tonight?" Serena asked, stroking his smooth-shaven head affectionately.
You really want to stage dive? He asked me with a skeptical, crooked grin. Girls usually get groped when they do that. It's not pretty. And then I may have to fuck the douchebags up.
Maybe not then, I replied. Desperate to try anything that would allow me to breathe again, I hadn't considered the groping part of stage diving. I figured adrenaline was a better choice than alcohol. If I couldn't be numb, I could at least get my heart pumping to temporarily dull the pain. But having strangers fondle me didn't sound very appealing. I slumped back into the couch.
What if she falls backwards? Serena suggested.
I perked my head up at this option.
You can try. Not many people do that because they can't see who's going to catch them, and it's a trust issue. Your ass will definitely be grabbed no matter what. Why don't you crowd surf so you don't have to fall?
I considered it, but knew that wouldn't be the same. I need to fall, I explained. And I can live with the ass grabbing. James wrinkled his forehead in confusion.
Why do you want to do it? He questioned.
Because I can't breathe, I stated flatly. Their eyes steadied on me, absorbing my words. James released a laugh, shaking his head.
I don't get you. Is that why you don't go out with guys? Because you're...
James, Serena scolded, smacking the back of his head with the palm of her hand.
I didn't mean it like that, he said defensively. She's just different, that's all. It's not a bad thing.
He turned toward me and said,
You know I think you're cool, but I still don't get you.
Serena's eyes tightened at his honesty. It's okay, I replied unaffected. I don't get me either. James grinned.
They're about to let in the masses, he reported, his hand covering his earpiece in order to hear better. I need to go. I'll see you after the show.
He kissed Serena and walked off toward his post.
Are you really going to fall backwards off the stage? Serena questioned, her dark eyes scanning mine.
I looked away, fearing she'd see too much.
Yeah.
My heart skipped a beat at the thought of it, countering the pain for a split second. I needed to do this, to feel something, anything else.
Maybe we should do a few shots, she suggested. That way, if you hit the floor, you won't feel it.
She left and approached the bar along the sidewall, talked to the girls attending it for a few minutes, and returned with two brimming shot glasses rimmed with sugar and two lemon wedges. I hadn't planned on drinking, but in order to get up on that stage...
To breathing!
Serena raised her shot glass to mine. My chest tightened with her words. I clicked her glass and threw back the shot, swallowing it as I've seen done so many times in my life. I coughed in protest, and my body shuddered. The lemon did a little to cut the distinct vodka bite. My stomach ignited as the alcohol seeped into its walls.
Didn't love that,
I admitted, puckering my lips from the sourness of the lemon.
It gets easier, she promised, smiling softly.
I had a feeling she wasn't talking about the shot.
Let's find a good spot in front of the stage before it gets too crowded.
She leapt up from the couch and pulled me after her. Serena fed me a few more shots as we listened to the opening act. I kept thinking I was fine, that the alcohol wasn't really taking effect, but I honestly couldn't tell. The headliner took the stage and the crowd squeezed in around us. We jumped to each song, rocking our heads and pumping our fists in the air. Serena appeared with another shot. I was so lost in the music I hadn't even noticed she'd disappeared.
This is it, Em, she yelled as she held up the shot. It's now or never.
We tossed the liquid back easily. I seemed to have acquired a taste for it. Serena hooted encouragements as I walked toward James. Without a hint of emotion, he nodded his head slightly, letting me know the stage was all mine. My heart thrust to life, and my body buzzed with nerves. He murmured,
Good luck.
Just before I hopped onto the platform, I shuffled to the center of the stage and saw a few people pointing at me out of the corner of my eye. Another bouncer from the opposite side started moving toward me, and I knew I didn't have much time. If I was going to do this, I had to do it fast. My breath quickened. I could feel the adrenaline pump through me until everything else was gone, and it was all I could feel.
I turned my back to the audience, hoping they had their arms outstretched behind me. The lead singer continued belting out the lyrics. I glanced at him as his eyes twitched curiously. I grinned at him ever so slightly, and I fell back. My stomach opened up, and I let out an excited yell. Hands gripped, jostled, and guided me across the crowd. Music bellowed around me. People hollered beneath me as I passed over them. The lights flew by in a blur of color. I rode along the turbulent sea of hands until I was gently lowered to my feet. I stood in the spot for a moment, orienting myself as faces flashed before me. The crowd rocked in unison, and their energy glided over my skin like a hot breeze. I thrust my arm in the air, hollering with excitement and jumping with the crowd. Serena burst through the bodies and screamed, "That was so fucking awesome!" We leapt side by side until we were drenched in sweat, and there was no more music to keep us on our feet. We collapsed on our couch as everyone filed out. I had what felt like a permanent smile on my face, and all that pulsed through me was elation. The room swirled, and the images shifted before my eyes. I blinked heavily, having a hard time holding my head steady. "I'm going to find James and get us some water," Serena told me. I think I nodded. If I didn't, I meant to. A moment later, the couch jostled beside me. I flapped my head to the side and found a lean guy with tightly trimmed deep auburn hair. His chin was capped with a buzz of whiskers. I smiled. Or maybe I hadn't stopped.
"Hi," he said, throwing his arm along the couch above my head. "I'm Aiden."
"Hey, Aiden," I greeted enthusiastically. "I'm Emma."
"Emma, you shouldn't be sitting here all by yourself. You need to come to a party with me and my friends."
"I do?" I laughed.
"Yes, you do,"
he confirmed with a charming smile. "I'm waiting for my friend," I explained. "I don't know where she is." I couldn't remember where Serena had disappeared to. The fog in my head was too thick to recall her words. "But then we'll go with you to the party." I smiled again, or I continued to.
"You're cute," he said, scooting in a little closer.
"You're not so bad yourself," my mouth said. He leaned over and thanked my mouth with a kiss, and I let him. I realized again that I couldn't feel his lips. Or maybe it was my lips I couldn't feel. I really needed to figure that out. I realized I was drunk. And I was okay with that, too.
"Emma!"
Aiden pulled back. I was confused by his retreat, and when I opened my eyes, Serena was standing in front of me. She looked mad. Why was she mad?
"Serena!" I yelled enthusiastically. "There you are. This is Aiden. We're going to a party with him."
"Hi," he said.
No, we're not," she snipped.
Wow. She was really mad.
"Get lost, Aiden."
Aiden pushed up from the couch.
"See you later, Emma."
And then he disappeared.
"Where is he going?"
I asked in confusion. "Who cares?" Serena muttered. "Let's go home, Emma."
"Are you mad at me, Serena?"
I asked, my smile lost.
"No, Em," she sighed. "I just screwed up and fed you too many shots. You're drunk and you need to go to bed."
"Yeah, I'm tired."
I felt dizzy on the ride home, so I kept my eyes shut, but everything kept spinning. I pressed my head against the window, begging for it to stop. And then we did.
"Em, we're home," Serena announced.
"Huh?"
I tried to lift my head, but it was so heavy. I blinked my eyes open as Serena appeared next to me by the open door. I stumbled to the front porch, leaning into her. My feet were clumsy, almost as bad as my head.
"Help me," Serena said.
"I'm trying," I muttered.
"How did this happen?"
Meg asked, her arm slid around me.
"My fault," Serena said.
I followed the stairs up to my room, but I wasn't sure if my legs were moving.
"There you go, Em," Meg said as I felt the pillow cradle my head. "I fell off the stage," I told Meg.
my tongue lazy and uncooperative.
You did what?
She did a stage dive, Serena clarified. She fell backwards off of the stage. My eyes wouldn't stay open, so I couldn't see Meg's reaction. There was a tornado in my brain that kept the room spinning beneath my lids. I groaned and flopped my arm over my eyes to try to keep myself pinned down.
Just get some sleep, Meg said, pulling a blanket over me.
When I woke the next day, my head was trying to split itself in half. Serena was overly apologetic, claiming she was so nervous about my stage dive that she thought she was helping take the edge off with the shots. I couldn't connect the logic of how getting me drunk helped her nerves, but the knife sticking into my head distracted me from arguing my point. I vowed to never drink again. Again. 5. Not boring. I felt a presence hovering above me as I bent over my anatomy book. As music blasted into my ears, I raised my head to find Cole standing across the communal table, a backpack slung over his shoulder. I eyed him curiously, not expecting to see him standing across from me after I'd ditched him. Twice. I removed the earbuds without a word and looked at him in expectation.
"How's the list of new things coming along?" he whispered. "That was an impressive stage dive at the club a couple weeks ago."
"You were there?" I wasn't certain I liked that he had witnessed the next thing on my list, the list that hadn't existed before I'd met him. "I didn't figure you for the type to like that kind of music."
"I'm pretty open to anything," he answered casually. "Can't always judge by appearances."
It was true. I had pretty much judged him the moment I saw him. He'd suddenly just become a little more interesting. "I'm surprised you're talking to me."
"Me too," he replied. "I didn't call you for a reason after Peyton gave me your number. A guy can only get blown off so many times before taking a hint."
"So why are you talking to me now?"
"Maybe a part of me is convinced you're not a total bitch," he answered, his eyes crinkling wryly.
"Just most of me," I added. My mouth quirked slightly.
"Well, I'll let you get back to studying. I think my time's about up."
He adjusted the strap on his shoulder and turned to leave. What's that supposed to mean?
"Before you walk away. It's usually about now."
He gave me a crooked smile. "Nice," I smirked. Cole strode away without another comment or a goodbye. I found myself following the untucked white T-shirt that hugged the contours of his muscular back until he was out of sight. I shook off the distraction, replaced the earbuds, and dove back into studying the ventricles of the heart without giving him another thought. Mostly. Later that week, I couldn't concentrate once Peyton turned up the music in her room and started preparing to go out for the night. I was packing up my laptop to head to the library and finish typing my sociology paper when my phone rang. I noted the California listing on the screen and was prepared for a wrong number.
"Hi, it's Cole."
I found my lips twitching in amusement.
"I thought you weren't going to use my number," I teased.
"I decided to take a chance," he responded. "Not sure why, but I'm calling you anyway."
I released an offended laugh.
"Well, maybe I should let you go then."
"Wait," he said quickly. "Don't hang up."
"I'm not much of a phone talker," I explained, "and I'm on my way to the library."
"It's Saturday night."
He sounded confused.
"Why aren't you going out?"
"Despite my resolution to try new things, I really don't party much," I told him. "You just happened to be at every party and show I went to this year."
"Lucky me," he replied, making me scrunch my forehead and wonder why I hadn't hung up on him yet. "Meet me out."
"What?" I was stunned by the directness of his statement, like he was telling me versus asking. "Did you not hear the part about going to the library?"
"Meet me on your way," he proposed. 15 minutes, that's it."
I drew in a deep breath while considering his request. "Okay."
"You're not going to blow me off, are you?"
he asked bluntly. I stifled a laugh.
"No, I won't blow you off. I'm at Joe's."
He hung up. The abruptness of it left me staring at the call-ended time flashing on my screen. Why had I agreed to do this? I glanced at my image in the mirror and shrugged, not bothering to make an effort before slipping my brown sandals on my feet. I really wasn't concerned if this guy saw me without makeup and wearing a holy t-shirt and cargo pants. He was the one who called me. This was what he got. I zipped up my hoodie before heading toward the stairs. Peyton peeked out of her room, her hair in hot curlers. "Where are you going?" "To Joe's, then the library," I answered without looking back as I tromped down the stairs. "Why are you going to Joe's?" "To meet Cole," I hollered back before closing the door behind me. It was past the dinner rush when I entered the sports bar, and way too early for the college drinkers. Various sized flat screens suspended at every angle broadcasted different athletic events to the virtually empty room. Cole was poised on a stool at the bar, watching a college basketball game on the large screen. I sat down next to him without a word, my eyes on the TV.
"Wow, you're here," he gawked, shifting toward me.
15 minutes, I reminded him, inspiring the return of that crooked grin.
"Fair enough."
He took a sip of the beer he had clasped between his hands, and I remained quiet, watching the game.
"Oh, you're still going to make me do all the talking, huh?"
he noted, with a chuckle. "I'll talk, but you'll probably be disappointed because I don't have a lot to reveal."
"If you're too boring, I just won't call you again."
One side of his mouth curled up when I raised my eyebrows in offense. "I'm anything but boring," I retorted, focused on his clear blue eyes.
"I had a feeling," he murmured,
not breaking the connection. I redirected my gaze back to the game, even though I had no idea who was playing and couldn't concentrate enough to figure out who was winning. I fidgeted on the stool and tried to contain the impulse to get up and walk out the door, knowing it was what I should do.
"So, have you thought about the next new thing to add to your list?"
I cast my eyes toward the ceiling in thought and said the first thing that came into my head. "I'd like to try skinny dipping." Granted, I'd never had the desire to strip out of my clothes and swim before, but I hadn't done it yet, so I blurted it without considering if I would.
"You don't have anything small on your list, do you? It's all or nothing?"
"All in, huh?" A hot spear shot through my chest as his words echoed from my past. "That's the point," I responded calmly, despite the tension along my back. Cole chuckled with a small shake of his head. Evidently, he found me entertaining.
"As long as you don't go skinny dipping at a party. That would be a little too much."
"That's not my style."
"But jumping in the pool completely clothed is?"
"I wasn't supposed to get pulled in," I explained, "but I had a little too much to drink and I wasn't fast enough when she grabbed me."
"So you were pushing your roommate in?"
he clarified. I nodded. He laughed.
"You're crazy."
"Yes, I think I may be." Cole held the amused expression on his face for a moment longer, and then he noticed that I wasn't joking. His eyebrows pulled together.
"You're serious?"
I shrugged in admission. This seemed like the best time to make my exit. He seemed way too intrigued. Cole looked at his watch.
We still have 6 minutes.
"Not anymore," I replied, and turned on my heel, heading toward the door with a committed stride. I thought I heard him let out an exasperated breath, or that could have been me releasing the tense air in my lungs. It felt like I'd been holding it in since I sat down. I shouldn't have come here to begin with. I'd hoped I could convince him that I wasn't worth his time. Not even 15 minutes of it.
"You promised 15 minutes, he declared,
jogging up next to me on the sidewalk. "Wow. You're either the most stubbornly determined person I've ever met, or you love the abuse, because I know it's not my charming personality." The corner of his mouth lifted.
"I think it's morbid curiosity, because no, you're not all that pleasant to be around."
I sighed in exasperation. "I don't understand you."
"What do you want to know?"
he offered, seeming sincere.
"I'll tell you anything."
I quickened my pace toward my car.
"Walk with me," he suggested. "For,"
he glanced at his watch,
"another 4.5 minutes.
"Fine, I'll feed into your twisted curiosity and give you 4 minutes, I said sharply.
Tell me something about you worth knowing.
Worth knowing? Wow, that's pressure.
He pondered. As I glanced at my watch, he blurted out,
I surf.
And that was more predictable than the sun rising every day, I scoffed. Is there anything you do that most of the state doesn't?
Well, I'm not exactly adrenaline-driven like you, he countered. I don't live my life in quest of the next adventure. Sorry to disappoint.
He should have been pissed. He should have turned around and told me to fuck off. But he didn't. He was seriously considering my question. He stopped along the sidewalk next to a house with an ill-fated garden.
Okay,
he breathed in contemplation.
I listened to silence.
With this, he started walking again. I stared after him. At first, I thought he was antagonizing me with his cryptic response, but then it struck me that he was serious. I caught up with him.
I'm pretty good at it, too. It might have something to do with having four sisters and never getting a word in. I became a sort of expert at listening to what no one said. I could tell when my older sister was fighting with her boyfriend, or when my younger sister was mad at my mother, or when my youngest sister was frustrated when she couldn't run as fast in track as she wanted to. I knew my parents were getting a divorce way before it happened, even though my sisters swear they had no idea.
Cole stopped and turned to face me.
I listened to silence. And you,
his mouth pulled into a smirk,
you have a lot to say, although I haven't quite figured out what it is yet.
The line between my brows creased as I stared back into the depths of his eyes. I didn't have anything to say. I didn't want to be this puzzle he was trying to solve or listen to. Time's up, I announced, starting back toward my car. But something stirred inside of me, something I wasn't comfortable with. Cole jogged to catch up.
I think we should hang out again,
he concluded as he followed me down the sidewalk. You do? Why? Wasn't this disastrous enough? He just laughed in response.
I promise not to delve into what makes your silence so loud, if you promise not to walk out on me.
I should have said no. I should have kept walking and let him go on with his life without my interference, but I didn't. I crossed my arms and released an impatient breath. Fine. Let's see how interesting you really are. He gave me a pretty cocky grin before replying,
You're not going to pressure me into coming up with something crazy to do. We'll just hang out, plain and simple.
I will limit my expectations, I goaded. He ignored my remark and said,
I won't be around much since I have a big paper due next week, but how about after?
Maybe I'll see you at the library. I pretty much live there. I stopped walking and he eyed me curiously. I can make it to my car from here.
Right. Time's up.
He turned in the opposite direction and walked away without saying goodbye.
Again.
Cole didn't say anything when he pulled the chair away from the table and sat across from me in the library the next night. I looked over the top of my laptop as he began pulling books out of his backpack. I returned my attention to the screen and kept typing. He didn't acknowledge me in any way and concentrated on his work. This continued throughout the week. Each night, I'd sit at the same table and he'd sit across from me. I wouldn't have known he was there at all except that his hair was so shockingly blonde that it would catch my eye as he bent over his books, taking notes. We didn't talk or attempt conversation. It was a little strange, but I dismissed it easily enough. When he was done, he'd close up his books and leave without saying a word.
Do you want to get something to eat?
He whispered across to me on Friday. I was calculating a statistics problem and erasing a lot. I hated statistics. Shocked to hear his voice, I glanced up into translucent blue eyes that awaited my answer.
Are you hungry? I'm getting something to eat and was asking if you'd like to come along.
I'm not quite done. I need to stay a little longer. I bent over my notebook and figured he'd walk away like he usually did.
How about tomorrow?
He persisted. I raised my eyes inquisitively, wary of his motives.
I don't date, I stated flatly.
I wasn't asking you on a date, he clarified, his neck turning slightly red. I was just asking you to get something to eat. You need to eat, right?
That I do, I deliberated. But no, I don't want to get something to eat with you tomorrow.
Are you trying to be cruel, or is it just me?
It's just you, I stated, continuing to work out the math equation in front of me. When he remained silent, I looked up to find him watching me intently. His eyes narrowed in on me for a silent moment, as if trying to read if I was sincerely messing with him. Then he stood up to walk away. I let out a breath and said, "Fine, I'll meet you at the alley at 7 tomorrow night. For food."
"Yeah, just food."
His annoying, crooked smile now flustered me, because I had no idea what it meant. I found myself looking after him as he walked around the corner. I couldn't be cruel enough to make him stay away, but I was certain that he should. I bowed my head and returned to the misery of my assignment. 6. 1,000 words. My ears picked up the musical chime coming from my nightstand before my brain could understand what it was hearing. I hit the snooze button, but the notes continued. I squinted an eye open to peer at the clock. It was after 3 in the morning. The chiming stopped, and I fell back into my pillow. My phone started ringing again, insistent that I pick it up. I groaned and grappled with the device.